What's up, everybody? Thanks for listening to the BTOSports.com podcast show. BTOSports.com has teamed up with us to offer you a great deal on your next moto-related purchase. It's easy. Fill up your shopping cart with at least $100 of merchandise and type M-A-T-T-H-E-S in the coupon section during checkout and you are hooked up. One more thing, folks. If you're looking for more Mathis, you're in luck. He's easy to find. Just bookmark PulpMX.com and follow Mathis on Twitter at Twitter.com/PulpMX.
Responsible if it does. What are you gonna do about it anyway? You won't have a head. You have been warned.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross, hosted by Steve Mathis.
Welcome to the BTOSports.com Trans World Motocross Podcast. I'm your host, Steve Mathis, and with me on the line is a guy that should probably, this might be one of the more interesting podcasts of guys that you really didn't think it would be, and that is Dave Castillo, asterisk braces Dave Castillo. What's going on, Dave?
Not a whole lot, just hanging out, getting ready to talk to you, and I'm going to have to disagree with you. I don't think it's going to be very interesting at all.
No, I think you're going to, this is going to be one of those underrated podcasts that I get emails about, guys like Rich Taylor, guys like you, Ross Maeda, you know, people that are like, let's see what this guy has to say, and then they find out that, hey, you've done a lot. You know?
Yeah, well, okay, let's try it out.
So what's going on with you nowadays? Your what is your title at Asterisk Braces there?
You know what? I don't really even have a title. I guess.
No, you're a marketing, no, president of marketing, or no, nothing.
No, like none of that stuff. We don't, I mean, Asterisk is interesting because none of us really have titles. Mm-hmm. And it's all run by owners. We all own a small percentage of the company, so it's really managed by ownership and by everybody here, and it works well because I guess I do organize and oversee a lot of the stuff here, but day to day I don't really do anything, to be honest. I mean, you know, I do. We have meetings that are really important a few times a month, and based off those meetings, we make adjustments. But other than that,
right,
the rest of the guys, the design team, who are working on some new stuff right now, and the sales team, Daryl Atkins, who's our sales manager, everyone's really self-motivated.
Is that Daryl Atkins? Daryl Atkins?
Yeah, Daryl Atkins.
Oh, okay.
Daryl Atkins. Yeah, he's actually our worldwide sales manager, and he's,
I had no idea,
he's a freaking pit bull. That guy.
South African. Yeah.
New Zealand.
New Zealand. That's it.
He's a Kiwi.
Yeah.
And he goes after it. He really does. And everyone here works really hard, which makes my portion of the job easy because I can organize things really well, and that's basically what I do. I just kind of organize and orchestrate and kind of touch base and have meetings, and then I'm free to do the other stuff that I'm fortunate enough to be able to do.
For people who don't know, Dave's dad, Jim Castillo, basically founded CTI Knee Braces, came up with the first ever knee brace for motocross, and grew that company, and then now you've sold that off. Or Jim sold it off, and you got into this Asterisk, which is not so much custom braces anymore. It's off-the-shelf things. And I'm wondering, how's business been? Because as we know, you know, gear's taken a hit, bike sales have taken a hit. How's it in the safety end of things?
Based on all of the stuff that I've heard from other people, friends in the industry, mm-hmm. we're pretty much on par with everyone else. I mean, I think things dropped, you know, into the 30% range over the last year, year and a half, 2 years. We were, Asterisk was in a good cash position at that point. Luckily, we never really overextended ourselves. We're not as big a company as a lot of people think. I know we have a big presence with the Supercross and the and you know, doing the medic rig and all of that. But we're a pretty small company. We haven't really had to overextend ourselves, and we don't we build all of our stuff here in the States, so we don't have to make huge orders. We kind of can make stuff as it's ordered. So we were in a good position, and it really hasn't affected us. We've stayed pretty strong the whole time and just riding it out. So, I mean, from that standpoint, it's been fine. But, yeah, we took a hit.
Is it just me, or is the off-the-shelf knee brace market kind of blown up in the last 3 years, 4 years?
Well, it has, and you'd mentioned just a minute ago with the whole, you know, Innovation Sports company, which my dad started and created the CTI brace and all of that. You know, from there, it really, myself growing up racing and being friends with a lot of the guys, you know, the Jeff Emig, Ryan Hughes, McGrath era guys, getting those guys to wear those braces sort of created kind of took the knee brace category and put it into the helmet boots category. You just wear them. They're a standard piece of equipment. And so when we started Asterisk, my dad still owned Innovation Sports, we wanted to kind of go in that off-the-shelf direction rather than the custom medical world, which was a tough place to be. And I think based on that, creating a product that had a lot of the features of a custom brace, but making it off the shelf helped to go in a direction that has blown up. And then obviously companies like EVS have come along and Pod. There's a handful of companies now making, you know, decent, good products that are off the shelf. And
I don't really know any of my buddies who just run kneecaps anymore. They either have CTIs or some form of Asterisk or some form of off the shelf braces.
I don't know anybody who doesn't wear a knee brace. The only person I know of who does not wear knee braces is Kevin Windham.
He still doesn't, huh?
No, he's just been rocking it old school the whole time, and he's comfortable with it. I've talked to him on occasion about it, and he's comfortable with.
Never remember him hurting his knee ever either.
No, he's. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say anything. Never mind.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want it. You want to.
I have nothing to do with what you just said.
Right. So okay. So what's cool? Must have been really cool growing up with your dad being the owner of Innovation Sports, and the knee brace market just exploding, and kind of being right there, testing new things, I guess, and testing new models and working on that. Must have been a cool heyday, huh?
It was good. I don't know that I recognized it as I grew up, but looking back on it, it definitely was a cool thing, and to be a part of something that was you know, fairly innovative and fresh to that market led us in a good direction to meet a lot of really neat people in different areas of that whole thing, and in the motorcycle world and skiing world and all these different places that have led to probably you know, everything that I've been able to do
in life.
The people have seen, and I didn't know it then, but who would have known a knee brace would have blown up into you know, Castillo Ranch and all of the fun that we've had and all of the opportunities that we've had in our lives.
And so, hey, you're one of the more interesting tweeters.
I don't know. I love Twitter.
Yeah, you're definitely on it, and usually you have some pretty good stuff on there, because one of your side jobs / main jobs / part-time jobs is a stuntman. And you've been doing it for years. I remember you even did it when you were racing pro. Talk about that. What do you do right now with your regular gig?
Well, like I was saying with Asterisk, I've gotten to a point where I'm able to just touch and go and hit on some meetings and let everyone do their thing. So that leaves a lot of free time to do, like you said, the stunt work that picked up for me. Actually, about 10 years ago, I started, and a guy named Jack Gill hired me to come do a motorcycle gig in Canada, doubling Brendan Fraser on a movie called Dudley Do Right.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, you've heard of Canada, right?
Yes, I'm aware.
Yeah, so I was up there. And that sort of was something I had never thought about doing, and, you know, kind of on a whim through Brian Manley and Mickey Diamond and Jim Hawley and these guys, Jimmy Roberts, gave me a call and said, hey, you want to come do this thing? I was, you know, and at that time I was doing, you know, Krusty Demons of Dirt films and stuff for right. free. So I was like, yeah, I'll come film, whatever. I really had no idea what I was getting into. And long story short, you know, ended up working on a feature film, doubling a big actor, and making a pretty good load of
the pay
money
was good, right? Yeah.
In a week's time, and I thought to myself, "Wow, how do I do this? Like this?
I want more of this. Yes, yes.
Please. How do I get into this club?" And it took a while, but you know, it was something I really wanted to do.
Yep.
And then from there, it moved on. I worked for David Barrett and did some stuff on the television show Motocross, and then went into the whole Charlie's Angels thing with Mick Rogers and Chris Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
And really, from that point on, really, really wanted to do it. And yeah. it took a while to become a regular thing. But since then, it got fairly regular. And then as of 3 years ago, I got a job doubling the lead actor, Zachary Levi, on the show Chuck, which has gone three full seasons now. So I'd say 3 years ago is when it really became actually more of my main job.
Yeah.
Then,
and you're not just talking motorcycle stunts, you're his double, so get thrown through a window, you're the guy. That type
right,
of
yeah, yeah, so I should go back. Yeah, so really, I wanted to break not out of doing motorcycle stunts, but I didn't want to just be a motorcycle guy.
Right.
It's not a lot of motorcycle stuff going on, especially after Supercross the movie. that pretty much.
I want to touch on that too, for sure.
Yeah. That pretty much killed it. There's not a lot of motorcycle stuff going on, you know. But so I do all kinds of stuff. I do pretty much everything you see him do, with the exception of any really intricate martial arts fights. I never, growing up riding motorcycles, mm-hmm. never had an opportunity to train martial arts. So, but pretty much anything else, that's all me.
Now, jumping a motorcycle obviously is pretty easy for you. But how do you learn? How did you learn how to take a fall, how to do, you know, because there's an art to it. And so
yeah, there,
how do you
there
learn
is,
that?
You know, and I haven't had to do that too many times, but the times that I have, it's tough, man. It's one of the tougher things to do, to actually lay a bike down, because it goes against everything you know as a racer or a rider. But it's just about commitment and preparation. And
no, I meant more, well, that's good that you said that, but I meant more like getting thrown through a window or dropping off a building or whatever you have to do. Like, there's an art to that. Like, how do you know how to do that? Like, does somebody teach you? Do you
know,
go to stunt
school? There is probably an art to it, and I wouldn't say that I know all of those arts, but I fake it really well. I really do. And
just feels like, I don't know.
A lot of times, hey, can you blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, yeah, of course, you know. And then you go do it, and you just really watch. You ask a lot of questions, and the coordinators usually are really – I've always had an opportunity to work with coordinators who are at the highest level and, you know, also – somewhat friends, and they've always been really helpful to me. But you just do it, and a lot of them are really, it's funny because they'll say, well, you're a professional motorcycle racer, so you can do anything. And I'm just thinking, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
If you think so.
I've done these shows with Holly and Rich Taylor, and I think I love those stories, the stunt stories, more than I like their motocross stories. I mean, Holly's got some incredibly cool stories, and so and I've asked both of them this same question: what was the gnarliest dirt bike stunt you've had to do?
Oh, wow. Gnarliest dirt bike stunt? I'm trying to think. Hopefully there's not too long of a pause here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, something that, like, because, like, Holly had one where he, like, had to do the BMW at the Italian job and, you know, had to jump it so far in between the cars or something, and it freaked him out. And RT had something on, I forget what he told me he had to do. Or what movie it was, but he had to basically clear some cars in Flatland, and it was, like, gnarly.
Yeah. No, you know what was gnarly? Yeah, it's going to sound lame. it was gnarly was actually the Supercross movie.
Uh-huh.
More or less
acting
because...
Acting with Tyler Evans.
Yeah, no, that was all real. Was because we actually had to get up. Like, I hadn't raced Supercross in years, and all of a sudden, we actually had to go enter the Vegas Supercross.
Yeah, that's right.
And actually race it and actually qualify for all, through all the events to continue to film. So there was not only the pressure of filming, but racing and qualifying. And I had literally just come off the couch, like, from 2.5 weeks of pneumonia and went straight out there and... And that was gnarly, racing again out of, you know, off the couch and just being in the mix with all the guys who are out there trying to, you know, win championships and that. And at the same time, having to think about the camera and where the positions were and where Rich and I needed to be on the track and you know, that kind of stuff. As far as just out and out, you know, I'm nervous, I don't want to do this stunt. I can't say that I've really done anything too gnarly that I hadn't done in like a crusty film that wasn't, you know, that wasn't scarier.
Which and you didn't even get paid for that, like you said.
Okay. Right.
So what kind of shooting schedule are you on with Chuck? I mean, I spent 2 days at the Charlie's Angels shoot with Nick, and I couldn't believe the amount of standing around and how little, like, the one scene that I took all day, it was literally 10 seconds in the movie.
Were you there on a first unit day or a second unit day? Were the actresses there?
Yeah, the chicks were there.
Okay, that's why it took so long. If you were to come on a day when it was what they call second unit, which is just all action,
right,
and generally no, none of the stars are there, we're 12, 13, 14 hours a day nonstop.
Uh-huh.
And you're shooting all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
Generally, when the actors are there, they're trying to get their dialogue, and they have to tell the story, and you end up standing around all day to shoot that one background scene for them.
Right.
But on Chuck, you know, it varies. It's all usually done in L.A. There's little locations here and there, but you know, they on television, they call you in last minute. It's not big, long days. They call you in last minute. They're on a budget. But, you know, it depends on the day. There's sometimes when you're in there all day working really hard, there's sometimes you get there, you sit there for 12 hours, you do, you know, one fall through a window, it takes you literally 1 minute, and then you leave.
Yeah.
So it's all over the place.
Oh, okay, so you really can't pin it down, which probably drives your wife crazy a little bit, because you're like... You're like, hey, I got to go to the set. I don't know if I'll be back in 12 or 2 hours.
Yeah, it's really tough during the shooting season, like August through March, because I don't really have a life. I'm sort of at their call. So, yeah, it does. It's irritating for my wife because she's always wanting to do stuff, and I'm like, I can't leave. I can't go anywhere. You know, I'm here.
Right. And I imagine the pay's pretty good. You're on a syndicated or a network TV show.
Primetime needs. Yeah. It's nice. There's money in it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And who would ever thought you'd be a stuntman, huh?
No, I never thought about it. Yeah. And I never really knew any growing up. I never really thought about anything Hollywood. But I'll tell you what, it's been really fun. I'm really happy that I got the opportunity to do it and that I continue to do it. And, you know,
all the stars on Chuck, cool. You get along with everybody. Nobody pulls any actor egos?
They're great. I mean, everyone there is really, really, really great. They're all pretty down to earth. They don't think much of themselves, and they come to work like everyone else and do their work and go home.
Let me ask you this. So is it like motocross where, or any sport for that matter, are you looking for the next bigger TV show, movie? You know what I mean? Like, what's the next step from here? How does it work? Do you try to get is it better to get on a movie? You know what I mean? Like, what's...
Yeah, I mean, you always want to do features if you can. And I, like last season on Chuck, I stepped away for I don't know, a month and a half to go work on a show called Priest, which was a feature film. And
it was?
I'm sorry?
I never heard of it.
Oh, yeah, it's not out yet. Oh. You won't see it until 2011. It's 3D. It's like a post-apocalyptic vampire movie. It's really cool. There's a lot of motorcycle work and worked with Regis Harrington and Riley Harper and a bunch of guys on that doing some stuff up in the soggy, dry lake bed on these really, really whacked out looking futuristic motorcycles.
Which were just dressed up CR450s or whatever?
They were actually KLX 450s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then the other bikes, when I was doubling the Priest character, was, I think it was like a Suzuki Hayabusa, and it was just decked out. I mean, I wish I could Twitter the pictures. I might have on accident once, but I think I maybe deleted it right after thinking I'd get sued by Sony.
Yeah, really. And let's Dave underscore Castillo on Twitter.
That's right.
Everybody who listens. And I've tried to spread the word a little bit. But so let's go back to Castillo Ranch a little bit. What was it like growing up with that place in your backyard? I mean, literally, what was it like?
Well, I didn't grow up with it. I think, okay. I'm trying to think when my
I'll fire my research staff ASAP.
Yeah, you should do that. I think I must have been 16.
Well, that's what kind of I meant. Yeah, like, like that age.
I mean, during my, you know, my racing years, I had it. So I guess that makes sense. It was great, but you know what? At certain times it was tough because it was quite a ways up north, and it would be hard to get guys to come up. So, you know, even having 500 acres and having everything you'd think you want, tractors and supercross tracks and outdoor tracks and watering systems and, you know, all the stuff, I got bored. I would bail and go down to, you know, to ride Paris and ride with my friends and go stay at Fro's house or go stay at Factory's house and, you know, ride with those guys and screw around.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, obviously the times, though, that all the boys would come up and play, those were the days. And we'd just get in tractors and just make all kinds of ridiculous hits and ride tracks, and it was great.
And this still being used today. Still, James Stewart just filmed the 2010 intro there not too long ago.
Yep.
Factories and teams and OEMs are still renting it and using it as a good.
Yeah, a lot of the, you know, Yamaha and Honda mostly use it, and a lot of guys come up and just do little ride days at the outdoor track, it still gets used quite a bit. You know, there's some local guys up there too, some local Central California Supercross Lights guys. I think I'm not really even sure who they are.
Your dad just lets them ride there. That's cool.
Yeah. I'm not even sure who they are.
I know. I consider myself fortunate to have ridden there twice. You know, I mean, you just Castillo Ranch and growing up in videos and in magazines. I mean, it was the Palm Avenue of the 90s, let's say, someplace where you had to go and be and all that. Was there one day that you remember just being more epic than another one? Like
there's so many. Out? Yeah, there was. We built. I don't know if you remember. It was pretty obscure, but we a friend of mine. And we produced a video, a motocross video. We tried to make something a little different than the Crusties and the Moto Triple X's that were out there, and tried to make it a little more professional and have a little more higher profile guys, you know, friends Fro and all those guys doing it. And we built I think we originated it, a 10 pack.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever saw the video. It's worth researching and finding, but we built a 10-pack of, I think they were like 60-foot doubles that were probably 10 to 12 feet high each in perfectly spaced BMX style.
Wow.
I think it was about 500 yards long when we finished it.
I remember that thing, but I don't remember it. I remember it in like Crusty and Triple X videos. I don't remember it.
Nah, they never shot that. They made their own after we did that. They all started, everyone went to make the 10-pack.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't the 10-pack.
Yeah, so we sort of, yeah.
What was the video called that you did?
It's called Ride MX. It's just one word, RIDEMX.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, if you find that thing on VHS or whatever it's on now, I actually would love to have a copy. I don't know where mine went. We had, I don't remember how many people we had up there going through it at once, but we orchestrated. I remember Pastrana was up there and Harrington and Clowers and. Gosh, who else was up there? There was quite a few people, and we orchestrated everyone in it at the same time, and some of the angles of that were just so amazing to watch, so fun to do. Probably the funnest thing I've ever done on a motorcycle. It was like riding a roller coaster on a motorcycle.
Yeah, really, huh?
You just and that's the highlight of that place for me. And there's been days when it just, you know, the perfect amount of rain and the perfect track and the perfect loam and the perfect guys. I mean, there's countless days like that.
Yeah, and I just remember it was cool to ride that one jump, the one with the hill where you just soar down the hill that we've seen in all those videos, right kind of by the supercross track a little bit.
The Doug Henry jump.
Oh, I don't remember it. Henry did it?
Right. Yeah, the Terra Firma. The very first film up there was Terra Firma, Fox Video, and that was when it really put Castillo Ranch on the map, is when the Fox guys, John Fox and those guys, decided to make a film and went up there and got Henry just soaring over that thing. And I think it was to an Alice in Chains song off of Jar of Flies, so it was just a really cool video.
Yeah, yeah, no, that definitely was. I can't even remember. Those Terra Firmas all blend together for me, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you're going to have to go back and do some research.
I know. Hey, so has there ever been, like, has any, like, vacation people tried to get in there or break in? Or have you ever had troubles with guys wanting? Because, I mean, you know, my buddies in Canada are like, oh, Castillo Ranch, I would just, you know, I'd just love to be there, ride there. Has any weird stuff ever happened like that?
Oh, yeah, it happened all the time.
Oh,
people,
really?
I mean, you'd come around the corner and there'd be people riding their motorcycles and you'd be like, oh, Jesus.
Really?
Yeah, and you got to, you know, you understand, but at the same time, they've got to understand, too, the liability. So you go nicely, tell them, hey, look, you know, I understand you want to ride, but you just can't. I mean, it's just way too much about a liability. And
I wasn't even going to ask that question. I thought I might have been dumb, but apparently not. I don't know how you'd find it if you didn't really know what you're looking for, you know?
Oh, people found it. Yeah. We'd find people constantly, you know, walking around, jumping the fences and just looking at stuff.
Oh.
Or even, you know. I remember some dude on an old Mako just riding around the ranch. I'm like, what? Really?
Really? You're really just going to ride around a ranch?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have any other outdoor tracks besides the main one with the water system built in and everything? Is there other ones?
No, just that one. We used to have another one over the hill from there next to my dad's house, which was built on this big hill of sand. And it was cool because it was just sort of burnt in, old school. We didn't really build it. We just started riding. I think maybe Meg and myself maybe burnt it in. I don't remember exactly, but it was when it would rain too much and everything was flooded. You could always ride on that hill. Like, it was just pure fluff sand.
Right. How far was Michael Jackson's ranch from you? I heard it was around there somewhere.
Yeah, well, it's like probably 15 miles or something.
Oh, it is? Okay, all right. So
yeah, it wasn't like next door.
Yeah, I'd heard that it was right there, and then I heard that it was nowhere around there. So yeah, I never really knew. I never asked you before, but so you never went down and pet the elephants or ride the giraffes?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I was young.
Yeah. Hey, so let's talk about your racing career a little bit. 971, Great Western Bank.
Yeah.
Were you a privateer in the other years, just out of a box fan? With I don't remember.
Yeah, I was always a privateer. I was never much of a...
No, I know, but I don't know if there was another team back then, but you were just...
No, I was never... No.
Right.
If I wanted to be on a team, I had to make it myself, obviously. So.
Well, hey, you made two main events?
Just one.
Just one? Yep. Okay.
Just Tampa. I was always close.
Yeah, you were.
I just didn't have the... I don't know. I think I'm a lot better rider than I was a racer. I was just never much of a good racer.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of fun doing it. But, yeah, I was a privateer. We'd go around a box van and, you know, enjoy the lifestyle and do it all.
And then what was your best placing in a national ever?
I wouldn't recall.
I remember you being up there a little bit, Castillo, at different times.
I just couldn't finish. I didn't have any. I didn't have the arms for it. My arms would pump so bad. You know, I could run in the top 15 for a while, and then I'd fade back. I think I probably had a top 20 finish or two.
Hopefully your wife's
not. Honestly, God, it was so long ago, I don't remember.
Hopefully your wife's not listening, where you're like, I'm not a good finisher.
Oh, no. We got kids. I'm a good finisher.
What was it like? So you're coming into the 96 season. You're like, I'm going to start a team. Great Western Bank. How did that come together? How did that form? Because I've heard different stories. Somebody had a bank sponsor, never had actually coming through, but somebody had a bank sponsor. You had a truck. Someone else had bikes or something.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. It was a year when Antonez and Phil Lawrence and Denny they didn't really have anything coming together for rides.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to race, and Phil and I had teamed up the year before and just gone out of a box van and raced the whole series, and Phil had done really well. I think that was the year he got second at the first Supercross.
Mm-hmm.
I think out of a, I don't remember, but in Orlando. And so really nobody had a ride that year, and I was just doing my normal deal, but we decided, you know, Buddy had this, I think his aunt or someone had a deal with Great Western Bank, and they had some money they wanted to put into racing, and so really it was just a bunch of, it was the four of us kind of got together and put it together. But as you said, at the end of the day, after we purchased everything, you know, there was a lot of other sponsors, Alpine Stars, and I think Extreme Gear, and a lot of people kicked in, you know, $5,000 here, $20,000 there.
Right.
And we were able to, you know, get a truck and get enough stuff together to get going, and then we were hoping for that big Great Western check. The problem was it never came. Something fell through somewhere, and we were just, you know, on a shoestring budget, just going around. And we had the best time. That was the best year ever. But, you know, we did it without money. Obviously, Innovation Sports, we had Innovation Sports at the time who was sponsoring it, too, and they ended up.
Your dad just kept writing checks going.
Bankrolling the whole deal. Yeah.
It's like, when's this bank money coming in? Or anytime, Dad? Anytime.
Yeah, no, really.
That must have been a fun year for sure. I mean, I know in the pits, that was my second year as a mechanic, and it was, everyone knew the Great Western guys were having a lot of fun.
Yeah, you knew that after the race, no matter how anybody did, that the stereo was going to be on, and there was going to be gear flying out of it, and there was probably people drinking beer, and...
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Now it's time to pay some bills.
Thanks for listening to the BTOsports.com podcast show. Please don't forget that BTO is the world leader in aftermarket motocross parts for the bike or body. You'll find deals like a Shoei VFXW helmet for $309.99, 45% off, or Smith Piston goggles for $32.99, 65% off. Your order can be shipped anywhere in the USA for free, or if you're not in the USA, we ship worldwide. Check it out at btosports.com.
And then flying on the jet, too. Your dad had a private plane at this time. And did you guys take that everywhere?
We did, yeah. We always flew that jet. He had that thing for his, you know, for Innovation Sports, for business. And then we ended up just using it to go to the races. Once you fly like that, you can't go back to...
I know. I flew on it.
You really can't.
I flew on it one time, Castillo, like 2002 when you rode for XXX or whatever that was, and you let me fly back, and that was good. I felt like a rock star.
Yeah, and so, you know, since my dad was coming to all the races, he was going to fly in the jet anyway, so he's like, well, let's just use it and whatever, you know? And so that, I mean, shit went down in there. It was fun. There was...
I bet.
It was a good time. I mean, when you're with Factory and Buddy and, and Denny, bad things are going to happen.
I'm sure Fro caught a few rides here and there.
Fro allegedly was in there.
Yeah.
McGrath might have allegedly been in there.
Yeah. And this was at the height when those two guys supposedly didn't like each other, but when it came to a private plane, they put their differences aside.
They did. Over a bottle of Jack Daniels, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, if you could ever write an autobiography, huh? Castillo, like a tell-all? Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, like fly on the wall guy.
Right? Like, totally. So, hey, how much do you follow races nowadays? And I know guys wearing asterisks and all that.
I follow it. I go to all the supercrosses around here. I'm not going to go to Vegas or anything just because my wife's pregnant right now. But I follow it. Yeah. I watch, you know.
Yeah.
I watch it every week on TV. I wish it was live. I just don't understand why it's not live. Really? You can't put it on live?
Yeah, I don't know.
What is that all about?
Well, it seems like whenever they are live, everybody says, man, this is awesome. This is great, and it gets good numbers, and then it's not live again, you know?
I mean, what does Speed Channel have on Saturday night? That
Pinks? All Outs?
That's true. I'm sorry. Forgot about that. Anyways, that can't be shown Sunday. I follow it pretty closely. I don't know a lot of the young up-and-coming guys just because I don't go to the Loretta Lynn's type stuff anymore. So I am losing touch, and I don't know a lot of the kids coming up.
Just like the 80s were special for different reasons, and I guess by the number of guys that were legends now, the 90s were a special time, too, before RC came in and kind of ruined it all by training really hard. But the 90s Supercross is a special era. It's different, huh?
I think so. I think it was more fun. It was probably more like the 70s era, more like the Hanna days. You know, everyone was just out to have a good time. And they were serious, and they were obviously talented. But they enjoyed what they did and enjoyed... You know, being a little more loose with the goose.
Yeah, some of the stories I hear, man. I mean, like Denny, I did one of these with Denny, and he was just like, "Yeah, Monday night, you know, was Club Rubber. Tuesday was this place. Wednesday was this place." And you know, and MC, the best rider who's killing everybody, was out there at the same time. So it kind of was like, okay, well, he's doing it, so I can do it. You know?
Yeah, there was definitely a little club tour thing going on here in Orange County that a lot of guys were at and having a really, really good time and then going out and destroying it at the Supercrosses and Nationals on the weekend still. So, I mean, it caught up with some of them and some of them didn't. And, but they had fun.
You always seemed to me to be a pretty grounded guy. You know, we're not real tight or nothing, but I've known you over the years, and for as much as you know, as you had privileged growing up as far as a track and a plane and all that, you always seemed to be a pretty grounded guy. Like it might have, some guys might have been a little different, you know?
Yeah, I'm. You know, we didn't always have money around. When I was growing up, you know, my dad owned a construction company, and not until he, you know, got really injured and created an e-brace did he have money. So I watch people work hard, and I know what it's all about, and yeah. I know, you know, I see the world for, you know, and I'm not a guy who likes to be in the spotlight. I'm not a big fan of myself. So,
you're not a big deal, like Ron Burgundy would say.
I'm not a big deal, absolutely. And so, you know, I don't know. I guess just my attitude towards life. I don't take myself very seriously or anything that I do very seriously. It's just it's all good.
Let me ask you this. You were around everybody in the 90s. Is there one guy, and I just did one of these with Brian Swink, and he might be the guy that you might mention, but is there one guy that never really fulfilled what he could have been because of, let's say, a guy that gets lost in it, like you just mentioned? Is there somebody that just was so talented and never became what they could have for whatever reason? You know, I mean, you've seen all these guys come up to the ranch at one time or another, or you've been buddies with all these guys at one time or another. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. It's so hard to say because...
Like Pingree, I just talked to him about this too, and his guy he threw out was Factory Phil, you know? He was really... I mean, Phil made a living and good living at it, but Pingree seems to think that he, you know, could have been a lot better had he focused.
Yeah, you know, but Factory Phil did focus, in my opinion, uh-huh. for a long time. Yeah. And I think, I mean, my opinion is that he did make it, and he was a superstar of the sport, and maybe he didn't win championships. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you come along at a time when there's a guy out there who nobody's going to beat.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what happened. It seems to happen every time. But, you know, you had your McGrath, and nobody was going to beat that guy at Supercross, period. until, you know, it's going to take a lot of years. It's hard to say. There's so many guys that were so talented that you're asking if I saw them at the ranch. You know, there's when we're all out riding together, you can't tell one from another. You couldn't tell, you know, like Regis Harrington from
yeah.
Emig.
They were all hitting the same jump.
Just riding, yeah, right, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's something about the races. It's something about the pressure. So I don't really have a good answer right off the top of my head, but mm-hmm. You know, even like I was saying myself, I think I was I'm a far more talented rider mm-hmm. than it showed in my racing, and I think that's true for a lot of people. I'm not a huge competitor, and and the pressure of the racing just, you know, takes 50% off the top right away, and your heart rate and the whole thing. So yeah, I don't really have a good answer for that.
Was there a time when you really buckled down and tried to make it, I mean, just like really focused on racing? I mean, and just it you realize, like, hey, I fall apart at the not fall apart, but I don't bring it to my best on Saturday nights. Like, was there a time where you
I mean, I think so. I
at some
always,
point, you know, the dream is there, right?
I mean, yeah, no, it was. I really wanted to do better than I was. I knew that I could, but I just really buckled under the pressure every single time, no matter what.
Yeah.
It was really too much for me. I don't know why. I was, when I quit, I was happy to be done because I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, just the pressures of trying to do it, I guess. Huh? I mean, from the outside, you're looking at your life going, that guy's got it made. He's showing up at the races in a jet, and he's riding around, and he's having fun. But inside, you're still trying to do – you're still bummed at yourself. You still want to do the best.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. From the outside, I'm sure it looked – I mean, it was a whole different story than the reality of it. You know, the reality was I was bummed all the time because – I knew I could do a lot better, a whole lot better than I ever did, and I just never was mentally able to allow myself to do that. I would defeat myself on the starting line.
Right. Right there, right.
Right then and there, I would collapse. My heart rate was probably 185 sitting on the starting line every time.
Mine was just that high climbing the stairs to do this show, but what about, was there... Now, obviously, you've taken place in all these races, but was there one race that stands out in your mind as the best race you've ever seen?
Best race I've ever seen?
Yeah, just...
I always look back at Anaheim 86.
Oh, yeah,
I mean, I think just for two guys going back and forth, that was maybe the best race I've ever seen. And then you've got, I don't remember what year it was, that race in Atlanta with, I don't know, five or six guys. I mean, there's that probably handful of five races that were kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
You just were all great.
Were you at Atlanta 90? I mean, were you there?
That's a good question. Yeah. I'm going to have to say no.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Well, you might have been, though, because who knows, traveling around.
I might have been, or I saw it on TV, or I did both, and I only remember the TV version.
Sorry. Old age will do that to you. Well, hopefully, when you're on the set of Chuck and they're going to throw you off a building, you don't lock up. You just jump.
No, you know what? It's funny because... a lot of people ask me about the stunt work and how nerve-wracking it is, and it's funny because it's not really nerve-wracking compared to racing. So
really, huh? Yeah.
Everything I learned from racing, although in my opinion I failed miserably at it from that standpoint, everything I learned from that makes stunt work pretty relaxed for me. You know, I'm not worried about much of anything. I'm pretty focused, and so it's a whole different deal. It's a different feeling for me there. I don't get nervous at all, and I think I learned that from racing and having that level even so much higher that this is pretty simple for me.
Yeah, really. I've heard other people talk about racing preparing them for like the business world and stuff. You know, things like that. So funny how that works.
Yeah.
Let's bring this thing full circle and talk about Supercross the movie. What happened? Like, wasn't that supposed to be a lot better?
I don't know what it was supposed to be.
Okay.
Coming from the Charlie's Angels thing,
right?
And the stuff we shot out there for Charlie's Angels, just to really quickly, was really good footage. And the rough cut of that put together, when we all saw it, everyone was really happy with what was shot. And then when the studio gets a hold of it, and they go do all their insert shots with the actors, and then do all the special effects stuff, they destroy it. And so coming from that into Supercross, I kind of just already knew what was going on. You know, know, you go there, you do your work, you do the best you can, you get your check, and you go away, and hope that people forget that you were in it. And so I don't know what the whole storyline was. I know, you know, the guys who are Feld now, I don't remember what they were called then, they wanted it to be good because it was going to, you know, it had their name on it, Supercross. It's just, you know, it comes down to the producer and the production company and how much money they want to steal away from it. And, you know, they've got a certain budget, and how much are they going to line their pockets with before they even go into production?
That's exactly what Taylor told me one time, too. Like, the producers are the key guys, man. They can determine a lot.
Yeah, it's the producer. And, you know, from what I know, I'm not even going to say it. But anyway, the producer, you know, he gets a certain amount of money, they get a certain amount of money.
I think RT told me this story at Indie Dealer Show over some drinks about the producer of that movie and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they decide, well, let's just, you know, maybe take this $4 million and put it in our pockets instead of put it into the movie. Yeah. And then we'll build the movie with, you know, with that $2 million over there and whatever it is, and it'll go to DVD and we'll still make money on it, and that'll be the end of the deal. And I think that's what happened, and you just end up with cheese. You know, you end up, and obviously, it's a pretty lame storyline.
Here's the thing I wonder about, though. Okay, you and I admit it's cheese. It's not very good. Now, I love Point Break. That's a good movie.
And I love Point Break, too.
And okay, so I am sure the inside surfing community looked at that movie and was like, this cheese. You know what I mean?
But, oh, absolutely.
But it turned out to be pretty good in my eyes. So I wonder if you and I were a plumber and an electrician guy, if we would think Supercross, the movie, was cool. Like,
I don't know if we'd think it was cool, but we wouldn't. We would definitely look at it in the, in a different light than we're looking at it now. We're, you know, we know better.
Yeah.
And I talked to other people who liked it. You know,
yeah.
I think my wife liked it. I think she saw it before we ever met, and she's like, "Oh yeah, I like that movie. You know, that's a cool movie."
I was at. I was in it too. The very beginning, opening credits, holding a pit board.
Oh, that's right. You were
cheering on Tim Ferry.
Okay, are you getting residuals for that?
I'm not. No, I haven't. I'm waiting for my checks to come. Do you get residuals as a stunt guy? Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you guys were... So
residuals are a huge, huge part of it.
So what's your check for Supercross the movie? Like,
oh, God.
$2?
I mean, well, you get them over a certain period of time. I mean...
Okay.
You know, after it comes out, you don't get any residual for a theatrical release. That's what you get paid for on the front end. But then anything after that, anytime it's on TV for pay TV or any
Even
type of thing.
Even on HBO and all that, that's all.
Yeah. All of that stuff is all, you get a check for that.
And it's
directly based on you know, how
much
you were
in
it. Purchased.
Yeah.
No, not how much you were in it. It's based off a percentage of what you grossed on the front end.
Okay. So can you tell us one check you got for Supercross, the movie? How bad is it?
Exactly? No, I can't. But I would imagine the first residual was, you know, $5,000 or something.
Oh, it was? Okay. All right. See, I was thinking it was going to be laughable, some sort of small amount. Okay.
Oh, I get residuals that aren't even worth the paper they're written on for different shows because they, you know, for so long. It's ridiculous. You get a residual for 23 cents.
Oh, come on.
And you're like, really? Like... Really? Like, it costs more to put the stamp on this thing. Like, just donate all those 23-cent residuals to a charity or something and make it worth something, you know?
I heard that you never know when the checks are going to show up because you never really know when they're on or whatever. And then, sometimes you can get in and get in a 23-cent check.
Oh, yeah, but sometimes, you know, I just opened one the other day from the latest Fast and Furious that I worked on a couple of years ago, and I had a big smile on my face.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So they're nice. It's great.
Christmas bonus,
They can pay for your whole month or two just in one walking out to the mailbox.
Sweet. Man,
it's nice.
Yeah, it's a good deal for sure. I wonder if see if you can get me some work as a motocross journalist, you know, or something.
You know what? I can bring you in as my fluffer.
There you go. Wait.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. I don't know.
I mean.
But getting back to Supercross, the movie, just very disappointing. I thought it was going to be a little different. I do want to say that the Charlie's Angels motocross stuff, it was cool, but I just knew that director was going to F it up, McGee, because he F's up all his movies. Not a fan. So
not a fan of McGee?
No, not a fan of McGee. And he just finished screwing up the Terminator franchise.
Did he?
Yeah. So.
I didn't know McGee when we started, but I got to know him a little bit on the film, and he's a really cool guy, so I have nothing bad to say about him. Right. I know he came from the
MTV,
rock
video
world,
yeah.
And I think that's, you know, obviously, so that's what's going to happen. But, you know, he's not totally to blame.
The
special effects department and everything, you know, there's so many departments. He just directs it. What happens after is what happens after.
Can I ask
Hall? So you can't put the blame all the way on him.
I asked Hollywood the same question. Nicest celebrity you've met? What guy you maybe wouldn't think was super cool and is?
They're all pretty cool. You know what? There's nobody I've really met. You know who I thought was going to be a dick, and was a really cool guy, and had really no reason to come over and talk to me for any reason, and did, and was just really pleasant, normal guy. Was LL Cool J? I don't know. I don't know why I thought he was going to be a dick. He's LL Cool J. I don't know.
You grow up
watching him, and you think, oh, he's, you know, he is what he is. But he was a really pleasant guy.
Arrogant rapper dude or whatever.
He was a really just down to earth, normal, nice guy. And you know, I worked on that NCIS show last year sometime, and I guess that's his main deal now. And Who else? You know, the actor I double on, Chuck, is a really great down-to-earth, non-Hollywood. I mean, you're not going to catch him on TMZ. You know what I mean? He's a really good, just sort of conservative guy.
I can picture him in my head, but I don't know his name. Yeah, right. He's not like a big guy where you see he's some sort of cocaine Lindsay Lohan scandal. I don't know.
No, and he never will be. He's got a way different attitude. And the same on the same show, Adam Baldwin, he's just a great, great guy.
So what about the opposite then? One that guy that really had no time for you and whatever Hollywood.
Well, they don't have to have time for me. I mean, they're out there doing their thing. I don't expect anyone to come up and be cool to me. I can't say I really remember anyone offhand that I thought, man, that guy's just
okay,
a total prick. I mean, they're all there, and they all have a lot of respect for everyone on set because everyone's working just as hard as they are, probably harder.
Yeah.
And making them look good, you know.
Hollywood said Eddie Murphy on that movie with De Niro.
I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that, but I've never worked with him. So,
just kind of look at him, kind of how he doesn't do any press or anything, kind of blows everything off. You could imagine that. And how's the catering on those sets? Pretty good, I guess, huh?
Oh, it's good. It's top notch.
I heard that same thing. I had to throw that in there. Castile, thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for, and I think like I said, people will find this very interesting.
Well, I hope so. I hope they don't shut it off halfway through.
Well, I don't have the ability to track that, but I can certainly tell you how the numbers are in a little while, and we'll see how they do. And so,
good.
Where will I see you next? Probably no nationals. I probably won't see you. Maybe the U.S. Open if they have one. I don't know.
I don't usually go to Vegas anymore.
Yeah.
There's no use. Packing up the family and going out there is pointless, and going without the family is dangerous, and I just stay away.
It's probably a good idea.
Yep.
I'm going to do the same thing. Unfortunately, I live here.
Oh, that's right. You live there.
Yeah,
Why do you live there?
Can I
interview you? Why do you live in Vegas?
Well, cheap housing. I lived in Orange County when I worked at Yamaha, and shocker, the salary of a factory mechanic was not enough to buy a house. So then I started looking at houses, and they were the only houses. Like, I come from Canada, so as you know, as I've stated many times. So I refuse to accept a 1,000 square feet condo for $300,000 as an acceptable price.
It's not about what you live in when you live here. It's about when you walk out your door and down to the beach, and who cares where you sleep and where you take a shower.
Well, this is going to lead me to my next point, was that so cheap housing led me up here. However, and this is going to sound really dumb, and this tells you again I'm from Canada, I had no idea it would get this effing hot here. I know
you're living.
I know. I live in a desert.
Okay.
I know.
Right.
I know.
Good.
And I tell, but I'm being God's honest truth, that the thought of the summertime heat never once came into my head as a detriment to live here.
Wow.
I know, right? Because I'm from Canada. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know.
Right. I never come here in the summer before. We come here in the U.S. Open and then for the Supercross. So I never really thought about it, dude. It's really hot here, as I'm telling you, as you know. So.
And what's your deal with Red Dog? Why are you so in love with Red Dog? Man crush.
Okay,
gay.
Listen,
for sure gay
listen,
feelings.
How close are you to Barnyard? Pretty close, I bet.
Right now, I'm about 30 feet from Barnyard.
Well, I meant emotionally more than physically, but Barnyard was your longtime mechanic / friend. And
yep.
I'm sure you guys have developed a bond, just like Timmy and I.
I mean, I don't Twitter about him ever. And if you look at my wallpaper on my Twitter, it's not Barnyard.
It's not Barnyard. Well,
nope.
I just got a little excited with the comeback, the back on the bike. I did get a little excited, I have to admit.
Right.
But I do play that up a little bit, too. You know, I mean, he's never paid me. I've never actually been his man friend. He's never, you know, I'm not one of those guys like, hey, go get my dry cleaning. It's we make fun of those type of people. But we are good friends, as you and Barnyard are.
Nothing wrong. I love Red Dog. I'm just wondering.
Yeah.
I thought maybe there was something else.
No.
Maybe.
No, nothing else there. Nothing I want to talk about anyways.
All right. Good. It's kind of like Michael Jackson's Ranch. I hear you.
Yeah, exactly. Right on, Castile. Well, thank you, man, for doing the BTOsports.com, who no doubt sell asterisk braces. And
love BTO. Love them.
Are they one of your best accounts? Probably are.
Yeah. Biggest.
You don't know. You have no idea.
Biggest account.
Everyone's the biggest account.
They're all the biggest.
Oh, man, I love it. All right, man. Well, thank you. And
I don't know when
I'll see you, but we'll see you around.
Yeah, I want to try to get to Nashville. They're fun. Maybe I'll go back east. I like Morgantown.
Yeah, sure. You're going to go back east to Nashville.
Yeah, I'll jump on the jet.
Oh, that would be good. Stop in Vegas. Stop in Vegas.
Should we stop in Vegas? Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, are you going to get Ernie next?
Yeah, I'm gonna get Ernesto Fonseca on the line here. We've been trying
to itching.
Text messages back and forth.
Yeah, bad news with Magoo, huh?
Oh, I know, real sad deal. Do you know any details anymore? Or I don't really.
I don't.
Did you know him at all? Did your dad know?
You know, I met him once or twice when I was younger, but yeah. I wouldn't say that I know him.
Right.
But you know.
I wanted to do one of these with him, and I was just in contact 2 weeks ago with a mutual friend of ours about doing one, and the guy didn't think that Danny would want to do one of these, and I was like, oh, that's kind of a bummer, because, you know, definitely he would have been a good guy, legendary rider, some great rides.
Cool. Well, I know we're recording, so we should probably get off.
Yeah, all right.
Now we're just talking. Cool. Well, I appreciate it, Mathis.
All right. Thanks, Steele. See you.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Right. Bye-bye.
This has been the BTOSports.com podcast show, brought to you by Trans World Motocross. Don't forget to check out some of our past shows, including motocross legends such as
The Beast from the East, Damon Bradshaw.
It got to the point where I didn't want to leave home, and once I got to the race, I wasn't into it. If I wasn't going to give 100%, I'm not going to take their money.
The working class hero, Doug Henry.
It was definitely an emotional moment for me, just thinking to myself, that's it, you know, and it's amazing the stuff that goes through your head in a short amount of time of the things that, you know, that I was going to miss.
The Dogger, Ron Machine.
Until you really open your ears and you want to listen to what they're saying, it's like beating a dead horse. I mean, you know, and I know from personal experience, did anybody ever sit me down? Of course they did. Everybody did.
Pro Circuits, Mitch Payton.
There's two ways to make the money. One is you can sign for money, or two, you can earn the money. I'm a high believer in earning the money. I think they ride better when they earn the money.
Seven-time Jeremy McGrath.
I was so mad, like so disappointed and so frustrated that I had pulled pick and I left. Every point counts. I could kick myself to this day for not just riding around in tents. It's been no problem. My ego got in the way, you know?
The O Show, Johnny O'Mara.
Stuff that you'd sit there if you didn't even want to ride it, you just wanted to just look at it all day. I mean, I got a chance to test all that. I like that era I was in. I really do.
Search Mathis on the iTunes Store to find these and many more great podcasts. I won't let this die. You know I've got this bad up in the atmosphere.